This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
Hello, America. Palm Sunday yesterday. While some of us were at church, others were planting bombs in a Coptic church in Egypt. Palm Sunday terrorist attack, 36 people dead, 100 injured. Seattle Mayor Ed Murray denies claims he sexually abused three men back in the 80s. Just like some consistency on this story, it'll blow your mind. Also, Donald Trump's travel expenses in 10 weeks have cost the U.S. taxpayers as much as Barack Obama spent in 2 years. And I remember totaling up how much Barack Obama was spending. This is remarkable. Consistency on this would also be nice. And if you are watching what came out of Washington and Iran and Russia this weekend on the Syrian attacks, there's some things that we should probably talk about, and we'll begin there right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. It's now been about 4 days since Trump administration fired 59 Tomahawk cruise missiles at an air base in Syria. That base was believed to be the launching point for the sarin gas attack that happened last Tuesday. They reduced it to a concrete junkyard last week. But I want to talk about the aftermath. What is the fallout on this? Well, a couple of things. First, we have Iran coming out and tells Syria to ensure Trump regrets his attack. Make America pay. And make sure that President Trump, quote, regrets his attack. Normally, I would say this is saber-rattling. However, there are some really disturbing things that are going on. First of all, if you listen to the language that is coming out of Russia, you are hearing language on both sides that I haven't heard since the Cold War. Tillerson made some amazing comments this weekend, kind of sounding like Doc Holliday at the OK Corral. He called the Russians, quote, complicit and incompetent in their support for the Assad regime in Syria. But that's not all. He also, all of a sudden, speaking for the Trump administration, apparently now thinks the Russians did meddle in the U.S. and European elections. This is what he said.
We will continue to talk with them about how this undermines any hope of improving relations, not just with the United States, but it's pretty evident that they are taking similar tactics into electoral processes throughout Europe. And so they're really undermining any hope for improved relations with many European countries as well. So this is something that Russia needs to confront themselves, and I think examine carefully as to how is this helping them achieve their longer term objectives.
Hold on just a second. Is it just me? I heard that this weekend and I thought it's not just, this is new, isn't it? I mean,
were they admitting Russian meddling in the election?
In the election? Yeah.
I think it is new.
I
think it is.
Interesting to hear.
Yeah.
I remember Trump saying he thought it was Russians. It just didn't have an effect on the outcome.
Right. A lot of them have said that.
Yes.
And that, not necessarily Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, though.
He hasn't said much since he's been in publicly.
The other ones throwing haymakers at the Russians this weekend was General McAllister or McMaster and also Nikki Haley at the UN. Now, before we get into the consequences here of what's happening because of Syria, can I just ask a question? Is there anybody talking about the collusion with Russia anymore? Have you noticed that just kind of went back?
Yeah, it doesn't. That doesn't seem to be an issue anymore.
Yeah, just think back to, Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
The headlines were about Sessions recusing himself from the Trump-Russia collusion investigation, Comey confirming Trump-Russia collusion investigation, Devin Nunes recuses himself from the Trump-Russia collusion case, and then the cruise missiles and crickets. I haven't heard a word about this. Now, it appears that the Trump administration has gone all hawkish on Russia, which was not where we were just a few days ago. Remember, this is a guy whose supporters were just a few days ago saying Russia isn't that bad. Russia is a friend of ours. The 80s called, wants their foreign policy back. All of that. Something's going on. Over the weekend, both Russia and Iran threatened to retaliate if we launched another attack. Beyond that, it's hard to gauge what Vladimir Putin is thinking. Vladimir Putin plays his cards closely to the chest, so you have to watch the people around him. This is why I've been watching Alexander Dugin for many, many years, because he is the chief foreign policy advisor to Vladimir Putin. He's the guy who got him to go into the Crimea. He is the guy that is also outlining and the architect of all of the meddling in all of the elections all around the world. He's very open about it. And he posted on Facebook some things. And that got us curious to say, well, what is he saying back home? Steve Bannon is an admirer of Dugin's. Marine Le Pen, admirer. Golden Dawn in Greece, he helped fund. The Alternative for Germany, they're winning elections in Europe, and they all have ties to Dugin in Russia. Putin listens to Dugin. When Dugin laid out the plans to invade Georgia and Ukraine, Russia acted. First in 2008, during the Russian invasion of Georgia, then 2014, when they annexed Crimea from Ukraine and launched a hybrid war in the eastern Ukraine. So what is Dugin saying now about Trump's actions? These are direct quotes from Dugin on Saturday. What happened on April 7th, 2017 could be the beginning of a third world war. One thing is clear. This is war against us. The neocons have now hijacked Donald Trump. This means that war is more than likely. Now, I've been studying this guy for a long time. We've been reading his words and watching his words since almost around 2000, before we even really knew what he was, because he was saying crazy things back then. We have really watched him closely in the last two or three years. I want you to think carefully about this. One of Putin's main foreign policy advisors sees the attack on Assad as a direct attack on Russia herself. To him, the attack in Syria was, see if this sounds familiar to anybody who has ever been on the, what's the crazy guy's name that takes his shirt off all the time? Alex Jones show.
Like that's his new title.
Yeah.
On his resume.
Yeah.
Crazy guy who takes shirt off all time.
Right. He believes the attack, this is Dugin, he believes the attack on Syria was a false flag. And they believe that Donald Trump is being manipulated by the neocons. The Trump-Russia love affair is now dead and a new era has begun. They believe that, and you watch, this is going to be played out. If Bannon leaves, that's the end of the love affair with Russia. They believe that the Reince Priebuses of the world have won. Dugin's writing in the past 2 days is frantic, if you care to read it. Half the time, he's doubting the Russian military capability compared to the United States. The other, he's game planning the next steps in World War III. He's outlined what he thinks will happen in the next few weeks. His blueprint is for the all-out coming of World War III. First, what he said, he expects war to escalate in the Middle East.
He even invokes prophecy, calling it, quote, the prophesized Armageddon coming soon to the Middle East. From there, he says multiple fronts will open up. He expects an attack through the Ukraine, retaking the eastern part of the country. At the same time, Crimea will be seized. Dugin reports that Victoria Nuland is currently in Ukraine setting that up. He believes that a series of terrorist attacks will spring up in Moscow, followed by protests from pro-democracy groups. He's blaming this on us. He says they're coming. But if you follow what's happening in Russia at all, you know that terror attacks and massive protests are already taking place in Russia. Finally, he believes a coup is going to be attempted to dethrone Putin. If your chief advisor is telling you these things, what does a dictator do? He also goes on frantically writing about NATO military exercises beginning in Lithuania, and he says John McCain is arriving in Serbia. Again, the United States is positioning itself, he says, for an attack on Russia. In short, Putin's main advisor expects complete chaos and unavoidable Armageddon-style World War III. Now, it's not surprising that he's predicting this. The symbol of his party is the, what is it, the seven-pointed star, which is the ancient symbol for chaos. He believes that chaos is a must to be able to, see if we've heard this before from Iran, to hasten the return of the promised one. He says that chaos should not be avoided. It should actually be enabled. It sounds to me like the guy we've been warning America about and can't get anybody to listen is now predicting that World War III is around the corner, and he is laying the groundwork to set the Russian people up to believe that we are calling it on.
Glenn Beck. Want to see Glenn live? If you're coming to Texas, you can. Join us at Mercury Studios in Dallas for a taping of Glenn's television show. To reserve your seat, email tickets at glennbeck.com with your information. That's tickets at glennbeck.com. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program. 888-727-BECK.
There's a couple of stories we have to play. First, I want to play something from Jeanine Pirro. She's the big Trump defender on Fox. Then we have to play, who was it, Pat, that was a CNN that was so desperately trying to get somebody to say something bad about Donald Trump? These two back to back are really incredible.
Yeah, it was Brooke Baldwin.
Yes, Brooke
right,
Baldwin.
Talking to Rand. And
No. First it was Jeanine.
To the refugee.
Yeah, Jeanine. Okay. Yeah, Jeanine was talking to Rand Paul. So let's play. Here's Fox News. Now listen to the way she is trying to get Rand to really heap praise onto Donald Trump. Listen.
And Senator, I don't think there's anyone who would disagree with you. But the question is, did we go to war with the attack by the cruise missiles on those chemical weapons? Or was this a one-off that was necessary? And, you know, that if there is to be further action, it might be necessary to get congressional approval.
Well, the thing is we don't know what is in the mind of the president, but we do know historically we've had similar situations. Saddam Hussein was a despot, did many deplorable things to his people, gassed the Kurds, kind of the same situation in Iraq. But when George Bush decided to go into Iraq and begin the war, they always begin with bombing. We don't know if that's the beginning or the end. He did ask for permission from Congress. So the appropriate way is to ask our permission. The danger is we would be at war everywhere all the time if there were no limits to war. And in fact, we have been at war for 15 years without any new voting by Congress. And I think that's a big mistake.
Well, you know, and I don't think there's anyone who would disagree with you. We're in too many theaters. That goes without saying. But at the same time, Senator, you've got almost 500,000 5 million people killed in Syria, 5 million of them, 5 million displaced all over the world. At some point, and everyone, even Chuck Schumer, I mean, agrees that what happened was horrific. And this guy, Assad, you know,
I guess my question would be, war has caused these refugees to flee and has caused these deaths. So will more war accelerating or accentuating the current war with our involvement, will there be less refugees and less death? I would say there'll probably be more death and more refugees. I don't know that our bombing will all of a sudden lead to peace.
But Senator, if we don't get involved, what does he do? Just chemically gas every baby in the place and every woman and child?
That's what he does.
No, he chemically gases. He's doing it on his own.
All right, stop. Okay, no, so, I mean, she's just jumping over.
His response is great.
Absolutely deplorable, but atrocity is not an excuse to disobey the Constitution.
What a great response.
Right. So there's an example of the right and the media. Now listen to CNN, who has somebody on who is a Syrian who is saying thank you to Donald Trump. Now listen to the other
side. For the first time it happened. For the very first time we see Assad held accountable just for once. Held accountable for his crimes against humanity. I was overwhelmed. I felt grateful for President Trump. I felt grateful for the United States. I felt grateful for each and every person who lobbied and called and kept on talking until someone actually listened. I felt
Qasem,
very,
I understand,
very grateful.
Though. I understand your gratitude, but still, you bring up Assad.
Still.
He's still there.
You know,
and question is, what's next?
What's next?
Yeah, that's a real question.
So you want
you're
more?
Right. You're absolutely right.
I mean, it's cute that Assad you thought that was good, Damascus. But it isn't.
He's still ordering his troops to kill and rape and torture.
What's he going to do, just gas?
He killed half a million people. He displaced 12 million people. He tortured thousands and thousands of people like we saw in the Caesar report. He raped thousands and thousands of women. He helped create ISIS with his atrocities.
Now, you know, here's what's amazing is you have Fox News saying, yeah, he went, but he's going to stop. I mean, he's got to teach him a quick lesson here. He's not going to go further. I mean, maybe if he goes further, then he should go to Congress, but he's going to stop. Okay. Mm-hmm. The warmongering right is saying, no, but he's going to stop. The left, who never wants a bomb dropped, is saying, yeah, but I mean, they didn't take him out, right? I mean, they didn't really do anything. There wasn't anything to this. It was just, he just dropped a bomb on it. It's amazing the hoops these people will jump through. And there's much more to this. You wouldn't believe how she's like trying to cut him off. Okay, wait, yeah, but wait. You should say something bad here. Back in just a minute.
Program.
Yeah. Carrie Fisher has just been signed for the next Star Wars Episode 9.
Congratulations.
How tough is it to sign dead people? That can't be that hard, can it?
I see dead people. Mm. Not hard. Todd Fisher has given permission for the family to Lucasfilm to use the footage of Carrie Fisher for for the final Star Wars movie.
I'm sure it was for some reasonable compensation to the family.
Oh, I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was.
And stop it with the final Star Wars movie. We all know it's not the final Star Wars movie. They'll can say it's the final one. There will be hundreds of them.
No, well, it's not even scheduled to be. It's only the second in this trilogy.
Yeah, no, they're saying, hang on, that this is the final of the New Hope series with Luke and Leia and all of those guys.
Yeah, there's one more after that.
There's going to be nine.
Supposed to be nine. This is only eight.
Well, eight is airing the end of this year. So that one's already got to be done, right?
Yeah. Right. This is for filming of nine.
Right. Right.
Okay.
So, in theory,
the next one after the December release.
Yes. But I mean, we all, like, they can say it's the last one, we'll all act like, oh my gosh, it's going to be over. And then they'll come out with 50 other ways to extend it. Like, for example, putting characters in the ninth one that you will get in 10, 11, and 12 and supposed to care about. Right?
Like, oh, no. You know. Yeah, no. It's like, it's like what they did with, Rogue One.
Well, they're definitely going to do that. But that's even different, I think, than what I'm saying. Because those are spin-offs of other parts of it. And like they're doing it with a new Han Solo, the early life of Han Solo type of thing. I'm saying that they're going to extend that storyline. There's no way they're going to leave those $5 billion a movie.
There's a lot of good stories to extend it with. So if they chose to do that, there's some great books out that did extend the story that were awesome. And it will be a different story.
It will be a different Star Wars. Because Luke and Leia are dead.
Yeah, but the Star Wars don't end because a couple people die.
No.
Right? Like, right. There will be other people having wars in the stars at that time.
No, it just means that this will be the final Star Wars movie with those guys in it.
Right, but that's like saying, it was the final Star Wars movie with Yoda. Well, right? The story kept going. Like, Yoda was a main character.
Let's boil it down.
They're going to make their money. This is what I'm saying.
This is probably easier. Genesis is it's not. What was it? Leviticus. That is the last book of the Bible with Moses in it. But Moses is sprinkled in all throughout the rest of the
Bible.
Lots
of flashback scenes.
Lots of flashback scenes. Remember when we left Israel? Yeah, we got it. So, please, we got it.
And that was a long time ago, and not a galaxy, but it was far away.
How weird is this that, they're going to take people now and recreate them?
Yeah, because we were talking about this on Pat and Stu recently, where Carrie Fisher in the last Star Wars movie, the young Carrie Fisher, you could
tell.
You could see it in Rogue One. Like, you could, to me, because she's such a familiar face, you could see the CGI. It was the general.
It was. I could see it on the general, but it wasn't easy.
I didn't see it on the general. In fact, I asked, is that guy still alive? Has he made a pact with the devil or something? Because he looks the same. And he'd been dead for 22 years. So they fooled me.
I thought you could see the CGI. I thought the Carrie Fisher was like obviously
that was pretty obvious CGI.
But still, I mean, and they're only going to get better at this. Like, it's going to become a point where there are just no actors anymore. They're just popping in, like, Scarlett Johansson in her prime in like 2027.
Well, according to this, now they're going to use footage of her that she's already shot, recent footage of her. So they are not even paying for any of the CGI yet on this last film. This deal is for footage they already have in the can.
I wonder if they own everything else. I wonder if they can
maybe they do. I don't know.
Well, and it's these things.
I mean, we have so many things that we have not prepared for as people.
No kidding.
That you don't own you. You don't own you, do you? I mean,
I feel like you own you.
Do you? I mean, can...
I accept.
Can somebody...
Yeah, they couldn't use us in a movie without paying us.
After we're dead?
I guess what this premise is
probably
saying...
Probably our wives.
It would have to be a family member that would approve it.
Family.
Mm-hmm. I guess. I mean, that's what... a lot of famous people have those things, right? Elvis and Martin Luther King.
So but what they have is yes to that. Huh?
You can count on Tanya saying yes to
them. Have you heard that?
She'll sell you down the river. You'll be in adult movies. You'll be in like pro-communist fare. Yeah. She doesn't care.
Yeah, Mike, I'll be on MSNBC.
Just touting the benefits of the Chelsea Clinton administration.
Yeah, that's right. Did you hear about the guy who is a murderer who is suing for his rights? Because somebody made a documentary. I'm trying to remember the crime that he did. You familiar with this, Stu?
I don't know this particular story.
So I'm trying to remember the crime he did, but it was a pretty heinous crime, and he's in prison for life. And somebody made a documentary based on this. He's suing and saying you didn't have my permission to do this story and represent me the way you think.
In today's world, he's probably got a case.
So here's the thing. He's suing, I think, MGM. And MGM is saying if they lose this case, there will be no historic depictions of anyone. You will not be able to do historic depictions because you won't have the right. You won't be able to do a documentary because you don't have the right.
Because usually there's laws set up so that you can't profit off of crimes, right? Like you can't commit a
crime.
He
couldn't.
He couldn't.
Yes.
But he's just saying, I'm not saying I want the money from the movie. I'm saying you're not allowed to make the movie.
Right. You don't have a right to portray me that way. And they're like, well, we're just using court documents. So you don't have the right.
They have to win that case.
They have to win. But MGM is concerned that they may not.
Every movie starts with the Law and Order disclaimer then, right?
Yeah, and it's like,
Jeffrey Dahmer is the name
of our murderer.
Right.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Right.
And that's what they do on Law and Order. They just have this exact same story with different names. And I guess that's supposed to protect them legally.
Seems to have.
Well, and then it also allows them though to twist history, because you can take
more dramatic license
and make the person
everybody becomes Oliver Stone.
Yep,
because that's what Oliver Stone does intentionally. He'll take the. I mean, I have a problem with stuff like that, to where Oliver Stone can come in and make a movie, and it is so close that you don't know what's history and what's not anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it is a risk, right?
Yeah.
And it seems to, I mean, usually with a public figure, you have a pretty wide berth on that stuff. But I mean, when you're just a guy who committed a crime, you know, I mean, you're not necessarily a public figure. At least some people see it that way. So
but you are with open court documents, right?
Yeah, you're a public figure. You're considered, I know this now, you're a public figure if you have, if you're in the news a lot, and if you have given an interview, there's two kinds of public figures. If you've given an interview to anyone, it shows that you're embracing the fact that you're a public figure. So you could be a public figure and never award anybody an interview, and you're saying, I want this all to stop. And so then there's a different level there of that one. You have to have a higher level. But the minute you start giving interviews, you're a public figure.
And the world is so complicated now. I think this goes back to what you were saying earlier, and you've made this point before. We're all searching for those simpler times. You know, like Star Wars is a great example of it. It just reminds us of this, what seemingly to us is some innocent time from the past. And we were kind of talking about in the break, the new Stephen King movie is coming out. It's apparently the most streamed trailer of all time. Is that right?
Wow. Yeah. 150. At least I have it. It's some crazy amount of.
Like 150 million?
Yeah, I think that's it.
That's good.
150 wouldn't be all that impressive.
No.
150 million. 197
million times in 24 hours.
Okay. That's a lot.
Yeah. So that's the record for one day. And
that's better than 150.
Yeah. Well, it's significantly more. Pat.
I would say more.
Yeah, significantly.
I'm not that good at math, but I would guess that's more. I didn't put a pencil to paper, but I'm just going to assume that's more.
Here's the problem with this.
Okay.
You know what happens when you assume.
Yeah, this is 197 million times globally, 24 hours. I just watched it. It looks scary as
it does look good. Yeah. It looks a lot better than that dumb TV show they did with it. Remember that?
It sure does. But I will tell
you. It sure does.
It was the first book I ever closed in anger.
Oh, really?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, you now, remember isn't that the one that ended with the spider?
Yes.
It's a clown all the way through, and then all of a sudden it's a spider at the end.
You're not fighting for this.
The spoiler alert?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, come on. I mean, it's a 20-year-old book or 30.
It's the only thing I've ever closed in disgust. I mean, because it's like, I don't even remember, like 800 pages.
Yeah.
And so you're reading it, and you're like, this is fantastic. This is fantastic.
What's it going to be?
It's a spider?
It's a spider.
Shut up.
Spider.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Really dumb.
So streamed 197 million times globally in the first 24 hours, beating the previous record holder of The Fate of the Furious.
Oh, yeah. That's the eighth one. Yeah.
The majority of older viewers remain, viewers reminisced about Tim Curry's turn as Pennywise in 1990. Some were less than thrilled to see the villainous clown reanimated. Professional clowns now are saying they are dreaded for another wave of anti-clown paranoia, saying the upcoming blockbuster will only further harm in the already dwindling industry of clowns.
True. That's not going to help the clown industry at all.
Guilford Adams, 42.
I worry about that. I do.
You should. There's a lot of good clowns out there.
I know, Jeffy.
Where's Donald Trump protecting those jobs?
Guilford Adams, a 42-year-old clown who has performed under the name of Gilly for 20 years, says... It's going to be bad for clowns.
That's a powerful quote.
It's a great quote.
Hang on. He goes on. According to Mel Magazine.
What's?
Mel.
Mel Magazine?
Mel Magazine. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's ruining our business.
Oh, no.
Another clown who performs his various personas, including Ringmaster Roger and...
Ringmaster Roger and...
And
Humpty Pumpty.
I just like the idea that we're in a serious news story. We're going to Humpty Pumpty for quotes.
Humpty Pumpty told his worries that kids will stop booking clowns for birthday parties following the film's release.
Right.
He added how traffic to his Yelp page has plummeted following the trailer's release. Everybody needs to go to Humpty Pumpty.
Humpty Pumpty's Yelp page. Come on, get there today. Make it your home.
It's not Humpty Pumpty. I got that wrong. It is Humpty Pumpty.
Humpty Pumpty?
Humpty Pumpty.
Humpty Pumpty.
Humpty Pumpty.
The children's clown.
That's the name of Jeffy's website.
You can go to that Yelp page today, too, if you'd like. That's fine.
That's fascinating. Yes. I mean, that's a different world right there.
Well, we're living in a different world.
Clowns, too. Clowns are hurting.
Remember I told you that you wouldn't recognize the world?
And what you meant was Humpty Pumpty.
Well, that's right.
That's what you meant.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. Glad you're here. Just to make sure that you understand, the world is completely upside down. We have a story on cannibalism in The Walking Dead coming up and, quote, why heroin and classroom sex are not enough to get teachers fired anymore. You're not going to believe this story. Yes, you will. Yes, you will.
So you're saying the combination, like you're on heroin and you have classroom sex and still that's not enough? Or
you'll
is it just
be
individual?
The judge next.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. We've got a couple of things that we've really got to talk about. The Sunday terrorist attack, Palm Sunday terrorist attack in Egypt. The Seattle mayor, Ed Murray, who's denying claims he sexually abused three men. I really want to discuss that. Also, why heroin and classroom sex aren't enough to get a teacher fired anymore. And this new trend of Chinese movies. China funding these big stars to do these Asian movies, and you go to them not really knowing, wait a minute, I'm walking into a movie that is not designed for me at all, until you're about 10 minutes into it and you're like, this is horrendous. What is the deal? I'm talking to about the eight to ten people that saw Ghost in the Shell this weekend. Or if you saw the other movie, what was the one about the Great Wall?
The Great Wall.
Yeah.
Creatively titled The Great Wall.
Yeah, very clever. Very clever. Not made for America. We're the secondary market. That and so much more begins right now.
Of entertainment. entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Let me just pick it up here. We've got some, you know, other news things that are happening today, but I think this is a great example of how America doesn't really count anymore. In many ways, it's the secondary market, especially, I think, with movies and television. When you're doing television, you know, it used to be, can you make it a hit in America? For instance, we were talking about this last week with Pat and his weird obsessions. Air Supply, not a hit back home in Australia. They were a hit here in America after they were failing in Australia.
What
you're going to give me?
That's weird.
You're such a jerk. He goes on and on and on about this on, what, Thursday or Friday, and then tries to make me look like the guy who knows about Air Supply. Come on, dish it out.
Who was it?
Yes, you do. Who was it that brought him over here?
It was Rod Stewart.
It was Jeffy's story.
That's why.
Oh my gosh, that's why
it was not my story. I would have researched that really well, and I remembered hearing Jeffy babble about it, but I couldn't remember all the specifics. But yeah, Rod Stewart
doesn't
brought
listen
him
to
over.
Me babbling.
All right. Yes. So what happened?
They were in Australia.
And they were not
Rod
a hit.
Stewart. They were minor, not making any money.
Okay.
The story that I was talking about was when they came to the United States, he was talking about how he remembered being in a hotel room, digging through the couches, looking for change to buy bread because they were so broke. And then once they started touring and Rod Stewart brought them over here, they got money and they're famous. And it was such a wonderful thing. Yeah. But he was remembering back to the days of digging through the sofa for coins just to buy a loaf of bread.
I wonder if they're digging through the sofa now.
Probably not.
If they're playing the Australian version of the Holiday Inn.
No.
Because they were huge.
They were massive.
They were
really
huge.
Everything, they could vomit into the microphone and it'd sell a million copies.
Do you remember Michael McDonald?
Oh, yeah.
Whatever happened to him? He was on everything. Well, there was a time when no song was allowed to be recorded without Michael McDonald somewhere in the background.
Seemed like it.
Right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's just like, we were done with Michael McDonald.
Because he went from the Doobie Brothers to his solo thing to with Kenny Loggins and Dolly
everybody,
Parton and everybody.
Everybody was doing
it. With everybody.
Yeah, everybody was doing it. And he would literally pop up as a background vocal on some songs. You'd be like, is that Michael McDonald?
Again?
Now, where is he? Just gone.
On vacation.
You kind of feel bad because America's a little fickle. You're like, you were a star yesterday. Bye-bye with you. Wait, I'm still the same guy. I'm still... Maybe it's just me.
Well, they get old and music changes, you know? So, I mean... You don't stick around for decades in music.
But you were talking about the Chinese movies, right?
Yes. So I saw Ghost in the Shell. Horrible.
Scarlett Johansson, right?
Horrible.
Really? Yeah, but it's a weird hybrid of American Chinese production, right?
Yes.
In fact, I heard that the credits are like all Shanghai Film presentation.
Yeah. No, it's a
with.
I think this is a Japanese anime because I got up and Rafe and I saw it, and Rafe and I looked at each other halfway through, and we're like, I mean, you know, he's a 12-year-old boy. Scarlett Johansson's in a skin-tight suit.
Yeah.
Just that should keep him entertained. And he was like, woof, Dad.
Not even that, huh?
No, it was bad. So we left, and there was some guy who was in the, you know, like towards the front row. There was only like literally like eight of us in the theater. And guy gets up, and he's like, That was horrible. They that's a disservice to anime. I'm like, oh my gosh,
to anime.
All right, calm down, buddy. But apparently, it's a big anime story, and it was obviously set up for a sequel. And I mean, you could see the sequel coming halfway through, and you're like, guys, you ain't making it to a sequel.
Well, it depends. I mean, these movies are not made for American audiences, as you were talking about. The Great Wall was the one that kind of first got Pat and I talking about this on Pat and Stu. And it starts Matt Damon. And the movie, by the trailer, looks so obviously terrible. Mm-hmm. You can't imagine why Matt Damon would be in it.
And of course, the only thing you go back to is they probably paid him $30 million to be in it, right?
Yep.
The budget was $150 million. It was about the Great Wall in the 11th century. And I know it ends with, I mean, the trailer, I mean, ends with a bunch of zombies maybe attacking the wall.
I thought they were dragons. Of some kind.
Sort of monster thing. I don't know.
I thought it actually looked kind of good if you're into that sci-fi fantasy kind of stuff.
Pat is very much, and we were not
it
into
it.
It
just looked terrible.
And the acting looked really weird, and it was like Matt Damon.
Well, he's the only recognizable star. The rest are Chinese.
Willem Dafoe was also in it,
that's
outside
right.
of that. It's right. all people.
Willem Dafoe.
Dafoe is in it, yes.
Which you don't
yes.
see him popping up.
And he
all
probably
the time.
Got $15 million, so of course
right.
he's in.
Right, you're going to say
he's
yes.
in.
Right? So the director, Zhang Yimou, which I know you guys know is you're familiar.
Favorite.
Well, I love Zhang.
Familiar with his work, such as A Woman, A Gun, and A Noodle Shop.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
I saw A Woman, a Gun, and a Noodle Shop 2.
I don't think he was involved in that project.
I don't think I saw the first one.
No, I saw the first one, which was a man in a noodle shop.
No.
And it was not very good.
let me just walk you through. Now, remember, this guy got handed a $150 million production budget. Let me give you his. This is his career.
Okay.
Red Sorghum.
Love that.
Zhu Dao.
Oh, man.
That was great.
Raise the Red Lantern.
Yeah.
Just stop me when you've seen, you've seen one of these.
We've seen them all.
In a
so
world
far.
Gone mad, one man brave enough to raise the Red Lantern. That works. I like that one.
The story of Kyuju is a big one.
Uh-huh.
To Live, Shanghai Triad, mm-hmm. Not One Less, The Road Home, Happy Times, Hero.
It's got quite a
House of Flying Daggers. I feel like maybe I've heard of that one.
No, you heard of Crouching Tiger.
In Dragon.
And something Flying Dragons. Or something.
Riding Alone for Thousands of Miles, which is about what the movie did. It made $252,000 in theaters.
Any of these hits?
Well, Woman Got in a Noodle Shop, I would say was a hit. It made $190,000.
Wait. Here in America or over there?
Is that worldwide or is
let's
that?
Let's see. I see if I can get Woman Got in a Noodle Shop. Came out in 2010. Domestic total gross, $190,000.
Yeah, what did it make over in China?
It did light up the foreign markets, $121,000.
Oh, okay.
So total of $312,000 gross.
How did this guy get a budget of...
Well, perhaps maybe it was because of The Flowers of War, which came out in 2012, and which had a lifetime gross of $311,000. Or perhaps
hit... He's getting better. Man in a Noodle was the start.
No, Man in His Noodle, that is a...
No, that's a totally...
Asian porn thing.
Yes, you don't
want to
know about that. Then it was Coming Home.
A Man in His Noodle.
2015 made $377,000. And then he was handed The Great Wall with Matt Damon and Willem Dafoe. After
that's unbelievable.
That run-up, okay?
Wow.
And that movie made... it was a bomb here, as you'd expect. It looked terrible. It definitely did not look it was aimed to American audiences. Made $45 million here, but $286 million overseas.
Oh, wow.
So it made a total of $331 million and a $150 million budget. And again, like this is with, you have to believe everyone outside of Matt Damon and maybe Willem Dafoe was not particularly that expensive.
It seemed like the one queen lady or something that was with Matt was one of a Chinese big star.
Perhaps, yeah, I'm sure.
But the rest of it was nothing, you're right.
Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of it's an interesting model because they don't care if you think it sucks.
Yeah.
They don't care.
No, they don't. And I'll tell you, television now doesn't care. They're not doing anything just for Americans now. It's all about the overseas market.
And it's because...
Can it be sold overseas?
China has become its own market now. They've got 1.4 billion
people. Pat, they need us.
Yeah, no, they really don't. Not anymore.
No, they do.
1.4 billion people, and about 700 million of those have some disposable income now so that they can buy goods and services. And they are. And it's happening. They are saying, though, that Ghost in the Shell stands to lose about $100 million.
Oh, my gosh. I'm thinking about suing them for my money back.
You should.
I mean,
sounds like
bad.
They said
but
it costs...
They could say-
almost $180 million to
I don't know
make.
Where they spent it.
$180 million.
Those tights could not have been that expensive.
But again, like, and this is a now this
well,
might
kept ripping them.
That might include advertising, because at least this site is saying $110 million budget for Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, they said
so. Plus, maybe advertising.
They mentioned that, but they said it's more likely it cost $180 million.
Wow.
In headline.
Again, wow. It only made $31 million domestically, which is not successful. Yeah. However, it's already made $93 million in foreign. So you're up to $125 million already.
They're gonna make their money back. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I mean, they might. They at least have a shot at it. They got a shot at it.
What's amazing is that these stars will have hits. They run the chance of being a bigger star in Asia than they are here.
It's like Homer Simpson. That's like exactly what happened to him.
Air supply.
What? In the documentary, The Simpsons, one particular episode, he was, I think he was on a soapbox. Was it soap or cereal? They used his photo without his knowledge in, I think, Japan.
I saw that.
A dish detergent.
I saw
that. And then he went over to visit Japan and realized he was very famous there.
I do not believe that that is a documentary. I think that was just an episode of Simpsons. Mm. I think so.
Well, it's a reality show, but yeah.
It's an animated. Have you noticed how yellow this family is?
Oh, yeah, no, let's talk about, let's make skin color the important part of this story. Typical media.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Pat, I will not hear you besmirch Fast and Furious.
Right?
It is. It's the Fate of the Furious, which is coming up. I mean,
looks great.
It looks preposterous.
How? How?
Oh, thank you.
One scene in particular. Mm-hmm. Is they're doing a big car chase on the ice. It looks like in the Arctic.
Of course they
right?
are.
Right? And yes. Of course, I mean, obviously, yes. Where else are you going to do a car
Correct.
Chase? So they're on ice in the Arctic, and a submarine pops through the ice.
Great. And then starts shooting missiles.
Fires
at them.
A torpedo right. at the car.
On the ice.
The Rock asks
we'll
his
have
passenger,
none of this.
Asks his passenger, steer. And then he gets out of the car. He's holding onto the door and at the same time pushes the torpedo toward the cars that are chasing him.
Which, by the way, only The Rock could do.
Which only The Rock could do. Yeah, absolutely.
What is your problem?
It's just asinine. It looks so
when
ridiculous.
Did you go, wow. When did you think anyone was going to Fast and Furious
well, it used
1
to just,
through 9
It used to
They're
just
not checking
be,
their brain. At
I mean,
the,
I've never seen any of them. So, but my impression is that at the beginning, there were about car chases, right? On city streets. And you would.
And drag racing.
And drag racing. Yes. And that's kind of what it was about. And then there were some good guys and some bad guys. And they raced.
Throw in a couple of hot
somebody
girls.
Somebody was a cop. And I don't know how the whole thing worked out. But now, now you got Charlize Theron directing every car in town to fire off by itself and drive out of multi-story car garages and down onto the street.
How cool is that?
And then they're all driving themselves, coming after these guys. It just looks so stupid.
Look, we've been warning you about the ills of technology for a while.
Thank you.
And at any time, a woman like Charlize Theron
could take control of every electric car.
Of every car in the city. It could happen. City.
And as long as it's driving to her house, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Well, now, here's the thing. I can't take any futuristic movie seriously anymore. If they can't get the car thing right, you know, set 20 years in the future, 10 years in the future, yeah. And everybody's still driving cars, stop it. Nobody's driving cars 10 years from now. Nobody.
10 years from now? Nobody's driving cars.
2027? I'd say by 2030. Yeah.
You think, is it illegal?
Yes, it's the insurance. Insurance is going
to
be
so high.
You'll
have to get rid of people who've had their cars for a while, right?
Yes.
You'll have to, and somehow.
So there will be a time period. I'm not sure how long that time period is, but nobody who is going to be in an action figure in a movie is getting into a car that they drive. You know, what's happening is they get into these new futuristic looking cars. The cars aren't going to look like that. They're not going to be like that.
You can't have a car chase, though, when they're all automated and,
it'll be breathtaking when they're all going exactly the speed limit.
Oh, and we need that person to stop his car, push a button. I'm not going anymore. You're being arrested.
Right. Okay, so it does hurt the plot line, but it's going to look ridiculous. It's going to look absolutely ridiculous.
So someone like Charlize needs to break in and drive all the cars from her iPad.
Exactly right. Except she won't be doing it from her iPad either, so I don't know how that works out. But
it's amazing how many people, even when these trends are really powerful and overwhelming, don't wind up. There's always so many people. Like, we always talk about this, like DVDs. Like, when everyone's streaming, they're still selling, you know, $1 billion dollars of DVDs every year. Like dial-up internet hung around for way longer than it seemed possible. But they say only 2/3 of Americans are smartphone users or owners right now. 2/3. So that means like 1/3 of America does not have a smartphone, or it's probably a little bit less as a 2015 study. But still, like, that's still a lot of people who do not have them.
Well, it's probably people under 12 and over 70, right?
Right.
That's probably 1/3 of the population.
I'd have to see. I have to look at the details.
I don't know. Check with older people.
Everybody else, they are, pretty much
they're
set.
They're playing solitaire on those smartphones like crazy. Back in a minute.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
How many of us would not go to Easter service next week if there was a bombing of a major church here in America or in your area? How many of us would not go to Easter service next week?
I mean, I'd still go, but I think surely would affect some
people. I wouldn't put
people.
My kids in danger, that's for sure. I might go, but I wouldn't have them there. I probably wouldn't go either, frankly.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know.
Wow.
Interesting.
I don't know. If you're a Coptic Christian,
right,
and there's not very many Coptic Christian churches, and they know where you're going to be. That's a little different thing than America because
it's true.
You know, there's not that many.
Yeah, if I were a Coptic Christian in Egypt, I would be very.
I'd be really hesitant.
It's a home thing today.
But if you really believe, and I mean, that's your deal. It's Easter.
Yeah, you might put it in the Lord's hands, or you might just say, "Let's celebrate Easter at home this year."
Who had Jeffy in the? He's going to go to church. Pool. Who had Jeffy being the one who said, you know, you believe it, you got to go.
Yeah.
The reason why I'm asking this is because this is Easter week, and I like Easter week. I like it better than Christmas far as the way we celebrate this. Palm Sunday, not everybody celebrates Palm Sunday, but I think you should put emphasis on Palm Sunday and Good Friday and then Easter, because Palm Sunday, here he comes in and, you know, he's riding a donkey. Because a king comes in on a horse, and a horse represents the conqueror. And so he's riding this donkey, and he comes in, and they're putting palm leaves in front of him and recognizing who he is. And he comes in peace. Thursday this week, he's having the Last Supper. His friend, and he knows all this is going to happen, his friend betrays him. He's taken, he's questioned, he's tortured for about, 18 hours, 12 hours before he's killed and dies on the cross. Then Easter. And by showing up on Easter, what we're saying is, oh, wow, look, he did all that stuff for us and everything, and we get to live forever. But how many of us are really willing, because the whole point of his life is to live out exactly the way the pattern of how we're supposed to live our lives. I mean, I don't think Jesus really needed to get baptized, did he? I mean, really? He needed to get baptized? Yeah, because we did. And so he's doing everything the way we're supposed to do it. How many of us are even willing to be unpopular? How many of us are willing to say the hard thing? How many of us are willing to stand against the crowd? How many of us are willing to go eat, Jeffy, don't answer this question, eat with the prostitutes and the tax collectors?
I mean, if it means that I have to ride a donkey, okay, but I mean, that's it.
I mean,
so true.
Sincerely, we won't do anything tough. Think of these Coptic Christians.
I know.
They are living it.
They're right.
Yeah. And I'll,
yeah.
And I'll bet they'll be at Easter.
Yes, they will.
Oh,
yes,
you bet they will.
They'll be at Easter service Sunday.
You bet they
will. It actually might make you want to go more, oddly. Because, I mean, it's one of those things where normally you might, if you, you might miss a Sunday here or there. No one missed a Sunday after 9/11. No one, when you have that going on, it's like it almost makes you more dedicated to go. I'll go, because you would put it, I think, in God's hands. You know, if this is going to happen.
You're
you
not going to tell me I can't go to church. Mm-hmm. This is for God and Easter. That's it. We're going.
Mm-hmm. That's the right way to look at it.
Of course, he won't be going to church, no even though there's no threat at all.
No. Even here.
He will not be going. He's with Cadbury. Just give me the chocolate eggs. I don't care what it's for.
To be fair to Jeffy, that is his church. So he does worship at the altar of Cadbury.
How is Cadbury faring this year? Now, this is from England.
Yeah.
Have they done it in...
The Cadburys were big time Quakers, Christians. John Cadbury was a... hardcore Christian. He was a good egg. And I think he'd be a little upset at the at what his company is doing now.
Taking off the name Easter and just making it candy eggs.
So they used to, I don't remember ever seeing it Easter, but it was always
Yeah, always Easter.
Always said Cadbury Easter eggs?
Yeah. Always said the word Easter. Yeah.
Really?
Pretty sure, yeah.
I don't remember
Seems like it.
I mean, I always, because you could, you know.
I mean, just always, maybe I just assumed and just put that memory in my head, but
it very well might have. I don't remember ever seeing it because
now it's not on anything.
It's not on anything.
So why would they make a big deal out of it if it wasn't there?
Right. Because I never noticed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just assumed. I mean, what is it? Spring eggs that a bunny leaves? Now I really can't tie anything together. I mean, I had a hard time tying that with Jesus. The eggs and the, it's new life. No, it's resurrected life. That's, what is that, reincarnation? What are you talking about, the chick? And how do the chick leave eggs that are chocolate that we eat? I'm disturbed by the whole thing.
And my understanding is that Cadbury eggs are not directly mentioned in the Bible. Now, they're referenced, and you think, like, it's
chocolatey eggs, yeah.
Right, but it doesn't actually say Cadbury. Any brand of chocolate eggs.
Right.
We actually had on Pat and Sid the other day Cadbury egg pizza. Because this is apparently a thing now where they're starting to make dessert pizza with Cadbury eggs on it.
And we wanted to celebrate Easter early.
Right. Because we're
Who made the Cadbury egg pizza?
Well, what they did was they went to Pizza Hut and got a normal pizza and then put Cadbury eggs on top of it.
With like sauce?
Right. Yeah. And we were like, that's gross. I can't believe. What? But then I looked at it, it started looking kind of good. And then I took a bite of it. And I was like, it's pretty tasty. A Cadbury egg is a legitimate pizza topping.
Shut the hell up.
I swear.
On a regular cheese and sauce pizza?
Yeah.
I don't know why. It gives you... See, I like the sweet and salty together.
Yeah.
Sweet and savory. Too. So normally I would like the savory turning into the sweet. That would be my preference. This one's like sweet and then it turns into savory. And I can't explain why it worked, but it kind of worked. Now
How many eggs do you put on top?
I think mine only had one egg on it.
They had the single serve Pizza Hut pizza, cheese pizza with one egg on top.
And then the heat of the pizza slowly melts the egg. So you have that little
throughout the sauce and the cheese. It wasn't that bad.
I will tell you, I went to Europe for Christmas. I was over there Christmas one day and never even thought of Rome, Christmas Day. Where are you going to eat? Nothing. Everything's closed. You know, it's Christmas.
What? Right. Yeah.
You know, I've never been a tourist on Christmas. Everything was closed except this one pizza place. And all they had was the traditional Christmas pizza. And I'm like, what's the traditional Christmas pizza? Pizza with soft boiled eggs or soft cooked eggs on top. No, it wasn't good. Everything was, no, it was not good. Cadbury, I could go for. This was not good. And everybody in it was, they were all looking at each other like, I know, brother. I'm a loser too. I don't have any family here. I've got nothing going on in my life, and all I've got is this crappy food.
With an egg on top.
With an egg on top. Merry Christmas. Let me give you another story that I really like some consistency in this one. Seattle Mayor Ed Murray has denied allegations that he sexually abused three men when they were teenagers in the 1980s, saying in a brief press conference that the lawsuit filed against him will not deter a re-election campaign. Murray, 61, gained national prominence with a long campaign to legalize same-sex marriage in Washington state. His request to raise Seattle's minimum wage to $15, a promise that helped him unseat the incumbent mayor in 2013, and his unvarnished criticism of Donald Trump. On Thursday, he was accused by three men of sexual abuse. On Friday, the mayor denied the allegations through a spokesperson at a brief press conference. The claims, Murray said, were very painful for me and very painful for my husband. There's a sentence that didn't happen up until a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He said he will not step down and he will not run for re-election, but he refused to answer reporters' questions, saying the case is now a legal matter for the courts. Spokesperson Jeff Reading previously suggested unnamed enemies were behind the claims. It's just not a coincidence. It's a shakedown effort comes down weeks before the campaign filing deadline. In court documents, a man identified only by his age, 46, and his initials DH, said that Murray, now the mayor of Seattle, raped and molested him over a period of several years, beginning in 1986. The accuser said he was 15 and addicted to crack cocaine at the time. His attorney, Lincoln Beauregard, said DH had sought mental health counseling and was taking part in an addiction recovery program.
That is a solid attorney name, Lincoln Beauregard. That's who you want representing you.
Murray said the allegations are simply not true, and he felt sad for the troubled individual. Beauregard said Friday that we had offered to make the DH tape available for a video deposition. Beauregard disputed that the lawsuit was politically motivated, said Murray wasn't being truthful. Attorney said the mayor's representatives never asked for his client's identity. How would he have any idea that he was a troubled individual? Two others, Jeff Simpson and Lloyd Anderson, also made allegations against Murray, telling the Seattle Times they met him while living in Portland Center for troubled teens. They said he paid them for sex in the 1980s, and they will testify.
So shouldn't people be boycotting Seattle until he steps down?
Mm. No more concerts there?
No more concerts there. No more NCAA events there. Mm-hmm.
No, nothing.
The NFL can't go there. No advertisers, no companies moving to Seattle. Shouldn't that? I mean, guy hasn't been proven guilty yet, but that doesn't stop him in North Carolina or never with does. Fox News.
And
or,
certainly you would say that all of these terrible accusations are far worse than mm-hmm. someone not being able to go to the bathroom of their choice.
Right.
Surely this will happen today.
Or somebody who offered a job for sexual favors.
Yeah.
Still
right.
horrible. Still horrible, but this is continually raped for years.
If it's a leftist being accused, why then we wait and we assume that they're innocent until they've been proven guilty.
But and even
if it's
then,
anybody on the right,
even then,
Anthony Weiner went through that whole thing, and they still almost elected right. a mayor. If right. he didn't have that second scandal, he probably would have won.
He probably would have.
His wife is back with him, and I bet you he's able to do something again in his life at some point.
Yeah.
You never, yeah. ever, they never forget. I mean, remember. They never remember anything that anybody happened. They just dismiss it like, oh, well, no big deal. We have a story coming up in New York, why heroin and classroom sex are not enough to get teachers fired anymore.
Should they be?
It's a good question. It's a tough balance. Yeah, how much heroin and classroom sex can you have before right. you lose your job?
Right. I mean, just because you're doing heroin a few times a week, does that mean you're an addict?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so.
Are you not the person? You need to ride the white horse just a little bit, but it gets you to school. You're teaching the class. What's the problem?
I mean, heroin is natural, and that's the most important thing.
Thank you. It grows mm-hmm. in fields.
Mm-hmm. It comes directly from the earth, guys. Come on.
And look how poor those people in Afghanistan are. They depend on that income.
It's basically
they depend
charity.
On it.
Stop trying to convince me.
Unless Donald Trump is doing it, then, of course, it's evil.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
The Glenn Beck Program.
I will be my job. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we have won.
Mercury.
888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Yeah, now we're... Pat's just looking at Alexander Dugin, the main foreign advisor to Vladimir Putin, and you're reading his Facebook page?
Yeah. Conservative groups from all over the world, including the U.S., have unanimously disapproved of Trump's horrible action.
Really?
It is kind of wonder, he wrote. I didn't expect such unanimity.
You didn't get it either.
An excellent sign of the growth of real global resistance with cold responsibility and a kind of common denominator. He doesn't speak English all that well. That is anti-swamp pole emerging before our eyes.
I mean, this makes no sense. This has been universally praised. Honestly, like, you know, you have a few people, Rand Paul has opposed it.
Yeah, the Richard Spencers
The alt-right did not.
The alt-right. Like, and they were actually out on the streets protesting. And he mentions,
that's who he cares about.
He mentions Breitbart, Ron Paul, alt-right, AFD, I don't know who that is, Liga Nord, Marine Le Pen, and hundreds of conservative people and movements. Like, okay, Marine Le Pen is conservative? No. People and movements have met that Trump's act with indignation. The time is coming when we will create step-by-step the real ideological common platform based on vision of multipolarity and alternative world future in front of liberal totalitarianism and neocons hegemony. So he's thinking that all conservatives are on his side now, and he was all about Trump during the campaign. He loved him.
Yeah, big falling out between the Pepe the Frog crew and Trump over
that's for sure
over this bombing.
In fact,
yeah,
Dugin and Russia beginning to say this is the beginning of World War III, that war now is inevitable because the quote neocons have taken over in the White House.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. There was a flight from United Airlines from Chicago O'Hare. It was going to Louisville, Kentucky. It was overbooked. They had four passengers that had to get on the flight because they were pilots for United Airlines. So they needed to get them to their next flight. So they all stood up the front. They said, hey, $400. Anybody want to take $400? Give you $400 free flight. Nope. $800. $800. We hear anybody? $800. Free flight. Nope. Guys, don't make us do this the tough way. What's the tough way? We just start randomly drawing names and pulling you out of the seats. Well, the first two said, all right, we'll go. Then they got to a doctor from Louisville who said, no, I have got to be home. I have patients. I have to see my patients. I booked this flight. I need to be home.
Right.
Please, sir, step off the plane. No, I booked this. I must be home. What they did to him next is shocking. Absolutely shocking. We go there right now.
I will make a stand. I will raise my voice. I will hold your hand. Because we have won. I will beat my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Because we are one.
The future. entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
This is one of those things that, you know, we talked about those things that you digitally sign.
Yep.
And I'm not even sure that's one of them, but it probably is.
I'm sure it is. In case of overbooking,
yep.
we have the right to pull you off the plane.
Don't overbook.
That'd be nice.
That's the fun.
That'd be nice.
You know what? That's crazy that they're allowed to do that. How do they get away with that?
And how did that happen where they were already on the plane? I mean, usually the overbooking scenarios happen when you're waiting to board, and they're trying to get people to do that. Why would they load too many people on the plane?
It's bizarre.
Could be that they had these pilots land and had to get a connection. You know what I mean? They might have been scheduled to go on some other plane, and then they missed it.
And then they prioritized the pilots over the actual passengers.
And that's what happened. They had two pilots and stewardesses or whatever, but they had four workers from the airline. And they prioritize the airline people over the passengers.
Can you believe that? Yeah. Over their customers?
No.
That were paid customers.
But if they're going to the destination to fly out again, then there's more paid customers. So it's cheaper to do that.
I mean, of course it's cheaper than, and certainly they're going to pay dramatically for the story you're about
to
hear. But why wouldn't they just keep upping?
Now, what do you have, Pat? What audio do you have?
This is supposedly shows the man being forcibly removed from the flight. So it's pretty dramatic.
Removed before takeoff. You're watching it right here. And it is going viral as
CNBC
we speak. The United
report.
Spokesperson confirmed that a passenger had been taken off the flight. Overbooked.
Get the one from the Chicago Tribune, because you have to hear what they're saying.
Do you have it on that?
Yeah. Just
plug it into that.
Yeah. Here. It's back to the beginning here. Yeah, it's right there.
And it's a weird thing, because once you have the people on, you can't take off, right? So what do? You could either up the amount of money you're offering the people to switch flights.
We've upped our amount of money. Now up yours.
Or you can just say, look, here's the thing. If we don't get somebody who accepts us in the next 5 minutes, we're just going to deplane everyone's going to deplane and this flight's going to be canceled.
Right.
So that's your deadline. I'm sorry about this. We have to do this.
Well, here's
at least you're not forcibly removing random passengers.
So listen, I want you to hear this. So this guy is a doctor. He's sitting there and he just says, look, I'm not leaving. I have to get home. I'm not leaving.
I got patients to get back
to, right? So he,
I don't care.
They don't care.
I don't even care about the doctor having patients. He bought a ticket. He's already on the plane.
Sure.
He doesn't want to get off. You've overbooked it. Sorry.
So you get, they send in the police, and now the police grab him from his seat. You'll hear him start to scream and drag him off the plane. He falls down on the ground as they're dragging him out. He scrapes his face.
He bashes his face. I mean, again, they are not trying to bash his face against anything. But when they pull him, he's caught on something, and he comes across really fast and hits his face right on the armrest, which is why he's bleeding.
Oh, okay.
Listen to this.
Pilots drive to Lola. Can't they rent a car for the pilots and have them drive?
That's him. That's just got hit.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. No.
Now these are the women ahead of him. Listen.
And
I love that it's a woman defending him.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is wrong. Oh my God.
Where are the men?
Listen.
Boy,
I mean, that's really,
really bad,
really bad. And you see this video.
That's a bad scene for United.
Yeah. Just Google, United airline removes passenger and you'll get this. Well, that is not going to go well for them on social media.
I'll tweet the link here from @WorldOfStew if you happen to be on the Twitters right now. I mean, yeah, they're having a real problem. And their statement so far is
that we were overbooked and we did have to remove one passenger. We apologize for inconveniences.
It's guys, I think
that's not going to be enough.
Look, I mean, I don't,
we should federalize all airlines. Wouldn't they be made so much better if the government ran all airlines?
And they have wide ability to pull people off airplanes, as we know. I mean, people who make any ruckus at all.
Yeah.
This guy, first of all, just seems to be sitting there. Now, my belief is, as Jeffy pointed out in the break, you probably are, when you click agree, saying this flight might be overbooked and you might not be
guarantee
on it.
Guarantee it.
And beyond that, if they ask you to leave an airplane,
you probably
can't just sit there and say no.
I mean, that's now whether that's right for United to do or not.
Think about that, though.
It probably is.
That's like going into a Walmart and buying a television set. And so you made the purchase and you paid your money. And then they say, oh, sorry, we sold too many TVs. There's none for you. Your $800 is just gone.
No, that's not what they're saying. That's not what they're saying.
They are offering to pay him. Yeah,
they're offering this is what it's like, but there's one big difference, and I'll get to that after. But let's make your analogy work. It's like going into Walmart and buying a TV, and you come up to the counter with it, and you're about to walk out, and they're like, "I'm sorry, this is store model. This one's already been sold. We're gonna have to get you another one. It'll probably be tomorrow." Right. And you saying, "The hell it is! This TV is mine right now.
I just bought it."
Yes, I know, sir, but this one was a store model. We have to get you the one in the box, blah, blah, blah. No, I want it right now. What's the difference? I have this TV. This TV is already sold, or it's a store model, whatever. That's more what it's like. In the end, Walmart would just end up most likely giving you the TV and just saying, just go.
No, we're taking the TV, and then we're dragging you out of the store.
Right.
And you're going to come back tomorrow and get the TV when we say you're going to get it.
Correct. This is the difference.
Yeah, but the Super Bowl is today. I want the TV now.
This is the difference. The difference.
We oversold.
The difference here is that this is a federally regulated industry. Mm-hmm. And so it is a national crime now.
Yeah.
It's now a federal crime.
Who's right?
You do anything on that plane now, you go right to the federal government. That's why these airlines, I think these airlines have become... just Gestapo tactics in many ways. The way they're frisking you down, yeah, naked pictures, they treat you like, I think they treat you like dogs. And if you say anything or do anything,
they can just throw you right off the plane. Right.
It's you, not them.
Right. Right.
I mean, always you.
You know, the Fourth Amendment is valid, you know, as, I don't know, like the steamboat these days, as far as the actual, like, it has all been dead for a long time. But I mean, even the First Amendment, you're going through those lines. We all know you don't joke about bombing. You don't joke about airline stuff. You don't do any of that, because if they hear you, they're going to pull you out of line, even though you're just basically, you're not making any legitimate threat, but they're so careful and it's so highly regulated that they do that. And most people,
and that's kind of understandable.
I agree.
This isn't.
Well, this is
what, it's not understandable.
But what's not understandable about it?
The fact that they oversold the stupid plane.
And they do that all the time.
And they shouldn't.
And that is part of their agreement.
It shouldn't.
Right?
Yep.
Imagine
how pissed you'd be.
Oh,
if you wanted to get home. I don't even care if you've got anything to do. You just want to go home and see your family.
You want an easy way?
And I paid my money and I'm on the flight.
You want an easy way to do it? Charge everybody $20 more, and you're a guaranteed ticket to flight. Guaranteed ticket to flight.
Like you're allowed to.
Because $20 will cover anybody who didn't show up and whatever. Okay. So just guarantee everybody a flight. Charge them, I don't know, $20 more.
The problem is that, and I'm sure they've done this math, is
yes,
people will go on orbits and see the flight is $20 cheaper from a different airline and take it. So they know that, you know, this is what this happened with StubHub, the ticket service.
Mm-hmm.
They had this big promotion for a while that we were like, we've heard you. We are now going to put all in pricing on our site. So you could go to StubHub and it would be like, because normally, like, you put a $100 ticket in there and then there's the fees and there's the transaction stuff,
and
it's like
$150
right?
By the time you check out.
And so everyone would be annoyed by that. Mm-hmm. So they decided all in pricing. They made a big deal about it. And I noticed one day it wasn't there anymore. And it was because people would go to StubHub and the ticket would now say $150. However, on every other website that's selling tickets, it all says $100. Now, they still have the fees and it still costs the same amount. Might even cost more.
Yeah, in the end, they're paying more. And they go, oh, it's insane.
But people are like, oh, these prices are way higher than the other site. And that stuff happens all the time. So they actually, now you have to opt in to the all-in pricing on StubHub to get the tickets. And of course, that's what I would rather have, because
me too.
We've thought about
it. You're paying either way.
You're paying it either way. But however, people wind up going other directions for their tickets. Why is this so much more expensive than all the other options? Well, it's not, but that takes 8 seconds of thinking, which is not what the American people like to do these days. That's not a tradition we currently uphold.
I mean, you can't cancel a flight, can you? Yeah. I didn't think you could cancel flights
can
up until the last.
Well.
You mean as a passenger?
Yeah.
You can, but you have to pay.
You pay fees.
Right.
You penalty.
You lose your money, right?
Yeah. No, you just have to pay a fee, a change fee, usually. Yeah. And it depends. If you have a
medical
a
emergency,
ticket.
Sometimes they'll...
Right. Medical emergency, death in the family, yeah. They can't gouge you either way.
Right.
But other than that...
I don't know about that.
I don't know about that either.
Certainly they can gouge you for death in the family.
Yeah, they don't... Those days are over.
Really?
Death in the family stuff?
I mean, they might do, you know...
Everybody's had a death
my
in
brother,
the family.
No, my brother-in-law just did it. When his mom died here, and he changed his flight, so they were pretty good about it.
Yeah, I think most companies will want to help you in that situation, right?
Yeah.
Because they don't want to piss you off, which is really the answer here, right? United should want to help their passengers. Now they're in a tough spot there because if they have to get these pilots to wherever they're going, they don't have many options. If no one will take the money, all they can do is up the amount they're going to pay passengers until somebody takes it, which is possible, but they might have a policy that says they can't go over a certain amount.
I'm sure they do,
which is stupid, obviously, in this circumstance. They can pick random people, which is what they chose, or the last one is they can just, you know what, sorry guys, everyone off the plane, we're going to have to cancel this if no one takes this offer.
Then it's a total loss for really two sucks. Planes.
Well, yeah, but I
because
mean...
Because then you lose that flight,
the flight back, and the flight...
Which is why they chose a random passenger, right? And I would say most... This is not a story if it ends in they picked a random passenger and he got off the plane and he was unwilling to get off the plane and it was over. The issue is... He was unwilling. They had to remove him forcibly. They did so in that process by mistake. He hit his head or his face on the armrest.
You just don't pull somebody out bloody with
100 cameras on him.
Right.
I mean, a long time ago, before cell phones, this isn't a story at all.
I don't think this would have happened a long time ago.
Oh, I do.
I don't think they had the same overbooking.
I don't think so. I think
that seems to be a post 9/11.
Yeah,
thing.
I think 9/11 has turned our airports and our airlines into really nasty.
I mean, look at this
things.
I'm sorry. I know it's radio. I'm actually for the first time seeing the actual video. That's amazing.
Welcome to 10 minutes ago, Jeffy. Thank you.
I know.
Thanks for doing your research for the 45-second video we just spent 20 minutes talking about. Thanks for waiting for the commercial time to just pop it on. And
so our sponsor this half hour is Casper.
Hey, wait a minute. I'm just seeing that this wasn't good.
Guys, you see this on this United flight? This guy was in his sitting in seat.
And they forced him out. He's bloody and stuff, and they're dragging him out. You see that?
This is crazy. I think they overbooked this flight.
Something's got to be done here.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Bad PR.
Wait a minute. This guy was a doctor?
Think about it.
We got to talk about that next. We
are one. The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
This is another way to go. A contributor for Forbes. Friday morning, flying from New York City to Florida with husband and daughter. Bad weather had passed, so they thought they had escaped the wrath of the horrible delays. After hours of them, however, Delta Airlines started offering money to volunteers to give up their tickets for an overbooked flight, which had 60 standby passengers hoping to get a seat.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
I didn't flinch. My husband and daughter were going to hit Fort Lauderdale to see our relatives. As far as I was concerned, nothing would hold us back. When the compensation for volunteers got to $900 a ticket in gift cards from American Express, Target, Macy's, and so on, my husband convinced me to consider the offer. I thought it was too low to delay our vacation, but our plans were flexible, so I said I was open to the idea. My husband approached the gate and offered to give up our seats for $1,500 apiece. She countered $1,350 each.
Holy cow!
Yeah.
Really?
Other frustrated passengers were yelling at the staff,
wow.
But somehow they got to... someone, an airline is offering your family $4,050. Missing a flight doesn't seem so bad. They also got a free hotel room and a complimentary dinner.
Nice.
So the next day,
that'd be worth it.
They go back, they made $4,000 on this transaction, something like $4,000. Then they got back to the airport for the next flight. Same issues. They started offering to volunteers 300, 600, 900, 1,000, 1,300. They took the offer again the next day for $1,300 a person. They got a new lunch, $15 each. Round trip taxi fare worth $50, another $4,000, on and on and on and on. By the end,
The family had made about $11,000 from Delta in the weekend.
Nice.
Oh, my gosh.
$11,000. They just didn't even wind up going on the trip. They just banked $11,000.
Could be
in
a
gift
lesson
cards.
That United might take.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. In this situation, you just need to go crazy and up the offer until one more person gets off. Yeah. At some point, someone is going to take that deal.
I've heard them go over $1,000 a few times.
Yeah. And it's only, you know, especially if it's only one ticket. You don't have to go to 11. I mean, it's, you go to $5,000.
You know,
and,
you know really, honestly, $1,000, everybody starts thinking about it.
Right.
Everybody starts thinking about it.
Unless you absolutely have to get back to work or
right.
whatever.
Like if you're right. a doctor and you have patients, let's say. That's why it's so ridiculous. Something like that.
All right. When we come back, another story that will blow your mind, why heroin and classroom sex aren't enough to get teachers fired anymore, and a new crib from Ford. This is absolute genius. When we come back. We are
one. The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
This really bothers me. Donald Trump's travel expenses in 10 weeks have cost the U.S. taxpayers as much as Barack Obama spent in 2 years.
Yeah, but Trump.
Oh, and it'll be a story this time.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What's he supposed to do?
Remember, it wasn't. When they went to Spain or wherever and it cost us a fortune.
Yeah. I mean, what's President Trump supposed to do? Just stay in Washington, D.C.?
You know, they're thinking about closing Camp David because of Trump and Obama.
Nobody ever goes anymore.
They're saying that it's just not fancy enough for the presidents anymore.
Nope. Nobody goes anymore.
Got to be kidding me.
Because Obama didn't go because there were no golf courses. That was supposedly his big beef with it. Plus, it was not fancy enough for him.
Although, did you see that Donald Trump has already out-golfed? He's outpacing in golf.
You got to be kidding.
No, outpacing in golf. Donald Trump's trips to luxury Florida Resort have already cost you $24 million, roughly as much as Barack Obama spent in travel in the first 2 years.
On? Just security?
I mean, between DC, just says traveling.
Let's see.
Florida, New
York. He has
York.
Spent 7 weekends at Mar-a-Lago since taking office 10 weeks ago. Estimated each of those trips cost at least $3 million, covering the president's security detail.
Yeah.
In total, his travel bill over 8 years of his presidency came to $97 million. Or $12 million a year. That was Obama.
And they're making a big deal about it, too, because, of course, and you'd expect this, when he travels, he's staying at Trump-branded buildings. Now, you wouldn't expect him to go to, if there was a Trump hotel in town, you'd expect him to go to it, right? I mean,
I would expect him to pay for all of it, too.
Especially if he's a billionaire.
Yeah.
However, he did donate his salary to the Park Service. So you got that. But I mean, yeah, $93 million in travel.
That's really good because there's no starving children anymore to donate to or veterans.
No,
or,
you go right to the
right to the parks because it's the last remaining cause.
Well, it is. I mean, I would say, I'm not going to say it's the number one thing in the Constitution that the U.S. government should be involved in the park business.
Oh, but it's,
certainly in there. It's certainly in there. I'm glad that
it's in the Good and Plenty Clause. I can tell you that.
There's no way a private corporation could manage a large field.
No way.
No, there's no way.
You gotta have the government.
It's gotta be us.
Gotta have the government.
Guys, can I continue here? You have to listen to this.
All right.
In total, Mr. Obama's bill came to $97 million, an average of $12.1 million a year. Trump hosted the president of China at Mar-a-Lago, almost matched this figure in his first month. In his first month, spending $10 million on 3 golfing holidays. The cost of travel and security for the entire Trump family is likely to be much higher as the First Lady Melania and Donald Trump's youngest son, Barron, are remaining in New York. New York Police Department have confirmed that its costs are between $127,000 and $146,000 a day to protect the First Lady and son. Mm. He hosts the Chinese president at Mar-a-Lago. He will have averaged $2.4 million a week going to Florida. If he keeps going at this pace, he will have outspent Mr. Obama's $97 million figure in 10 months. Critics have pointed out that the president cut back on these visits. He could fund Social Security and arts programs he's planning to slash. Trump administration is looking to make $597 million in cuts to government departments. Just less than the $600 million security arrangements for Mr. Trump's Mar-a-Lago visits are estimated to cost the taxpayer over the course of his four-year term. He's making $597 million in cuts, and he's got $600 million in his security arrangements just for his travel.
Works out.
Unbelievable.
That's incredible.
Listen to this.
And to be consistent, you should be, if you're critical of Obama, you should be critical here, right? I mean, I
we were very critical of how much the president was spending. This is awful. Absolutely awful. You want the heroin sex thing, or do you want the new thing from Ford, which is mind-blowing?
I mean, you've been promising heroin sex all day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you not get to the heroin sex story?
Heroin sex story?
Yeah, I think so.
Why heroin and
notice you didn't even have to ask Jeffy.
Oh, I could care less about that crib thing.
Why heroin and classroom sex are not enough to get teachers fired anymore. The city's bad apple teachers have a surprising new ally these days, Manhattan judges. Now, I don't know why this is new to anybody.
It's not new, because we talked about this in 2010.
But we were in New York.
Yeah.
And so we were seeing these every day.
And it was, they're called the safe room or something, where they put these teachers in there.
And they'll go up to their whole contract. They'll serve.
Yeah.
They just show up.
And they
do nothing.
They get their full salary, and they're not teaching classes. They just sit in this room.
Not allowed to. They're not allowed to teach classes because they've done something horrible that you can't be around children. So they just sit in a quiet room and, like, read the paper, go on the internet, and then collect the salary.
And do heroin.
Well, I mean, sometimes.
At the heart of the troubling trend is a legal standard that requires the courts to defer to the city's Department of Education when it terminates a teacher, unless the judge believes that the firing shocks the conscience. Given a growing number of overturned punishments, it's clear that the shock threshold is getting easier and easier to meet. Wait, city education when it terminates a teacher, unless the judge believes the firing shocks the conscience of who?
The community, I guess?
I don't know. Some legal observers insist the judges aren't to blame. They're really saying that it is the fault of the city education officials for leveling overly harsh punishments against bad teachers in the first place.
Oh yeah,
there you go. So
harsh they are. They are so harsh on the teachers sleeping with children or doing drugs. I mean, that's too much.
The controversial conscience standard. Look this up for tomorrow, will you? The controversial conscience standard has been around since the 1970s. Court of Appeals, blah blah blah. The courts were also shocked at the firing of two female romance language teachers over a topless tryst in the classroom. Last month, the city
What?
Enrollment soared.
Two female teachers got topless in the classroom, and the courts were shocked at that they were fired.
Well, try this one.
Come on.
Try this one. They also were shocked that a Brooklyn high school teacher was canned for bringing in heroin in his backpack to school.
They probably just forgot it was there.
Last month, the city was forced to appeal the court ruling that sent a Queens elementary school teacher back into the classroom, even after she flunked three of her four previous performance ratings.
She didn't flunk all four.
No, she had one.
Right.
That was,
she had one.
She
that
passed
was fine.
One. She passed
okay,
one.
Okay, so get off her back.
Right.
Jeez. What are we? We don't need perfect teachers. Can we not let perfect be the enemy of good? Is that okay?
Thank you.
Amen.
Can we not do that?
Sure. They had a romantic topless tryst in the classroom.
They're not perfect.
We're not hiring the Pope to be
teacher. Let he who is without sin teach these classes if you're going to fire these wonderful women.
It seems to me they're just targeting the sort of love that was demonstrated in that room. I mean, that's the problem here.
Mm-hmm. Now, Richard. May I tell you, I don't speak Spanish, so I'm having a hard time explaining this, from the website. This is the Ford website, but it's por eso Ademus de Tenor La Gama Max, all capitalized, I don't know why. pensada para las necesidades.
You're going to be surprised to hear we don't actually need to hear the Spanish.
Yeah.
You could just tell us about the story.
Right. Really? You don't? Okay, because it's all in Spanish, yes. And I thought it was important. I thought the whole world was going to Spanish because I can't find it in English.
Well, so this is actually happening in
Spain. This is actually happening in Spain, and I think they should make this for... I think they should make this product.
Period.
And they should make it for the whole world, and I want one now. As a grandfather, I want one now. This could replace the automobile. Ford is not, you know... I mean, sure, they're still building great cars and everything, but this might be their future. Who has a child that has... that went through the period where they could not sleep unless you were driving them around in the car. Yeah.
I had that.
I still do that now.
I had that.
Right. Make these big enough and you adults in them. You drive the kid around and the minute you stop the car, they wake up. Mm-hmm. Right. So what they did is they made a crib that models the drive with your car. And so what you do is you have an app on your cell phone.
That doesn't just shake it.
No, no.
You know how they have the vibrating cribs or whatever where just shake?
Mm-mm.
This is really cool because it has the sound of the engine and the lights as if
around the crib.
Yeah.
And it's the soft yellow light of like night. And then you put your on your cell phone this app and you drive in your car and it links with your car to sense the motion, the vibration, the sound of the motor, and then you bring it back and you then download it into the crib. And the crib has little like servo motors that actually mimics the stop and the start of the car.
That is so cool.
And the turns and the bumps in the road.
It's an amazing thing.
It recreates the exact sound of the engine and the lights. Really? Is that the greatest? They've only made one, and it's up for auction. You're going to have to know how to speak Spanish. But it is for a charity in Spain. And I think if this thing gets out, what would you pay?
They would pay a ton.
A ton.
People would totally buy these.
Yeah, and you'd buy... I mean, there's rich people out there that would just buy these because they have a son or a grandson or, you know, whatever. But also just to have it. It's the only one made by Ford.
But this is a legitimate product, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
this
should not be a one-off. They should actually just sell these. Yes.
Seriously.
Yeah, no. I really wanted to find out what Ford was saying about it because I think it was the Ford engineers that did it. But I don't know because it's all in Spanish.
When we had our kids, we bought something that sort of like it wasn't a complete car, but it moved around these gentle patterns. There's all these different things, and it was like pretty. It was probably the most expensive, stupid baby thing we bought. And we're like, this is going to be great because you know the kids would fall asleep in the car, and this kind of simulated the an R2. Thank you. Simulated the motion of a car. And we bought it, and literally, they never fell asleep in the thing. I mean, there was not a time in which they even moderately considered sleep, either one of them.
Oh, man.
And so,
well, the problem with this crib is, I think, strapping them into the chair, I think the way they're seated, too, not laying down.
Right.
I mean, they're in that mm-hmm. chair, so it automatically doesn't feel like... I mean, unless you're driving around and you leave your kids in the seat, in the front seat.
Wait, the engineers couldn't figure out that they're sitting in the cars?
Guys. Yeah, no, it's a flat.
No,
it's a crib.
Yeah, it's a flat crib. You should, should probably start seated.
But like, I'm not an engineer, and I think I could have figured out that maybe it should simulate a seating motion. Like, well, shouldn't it have, if you're going to do that, shouldn't the baby be seated?
Well, you could conceivably put the car seat in the crib, right? If you really want the full experience. And then it'll move the kid around.
Because
like
being strapped in
sort
is
of,
a
yeah.
big deal, too. You know, getting in that car seat and getting strapped in and just, all right, now I can go
sleep. I've noticed you relax when they put the jacket on you.
Absolutely.
And they tie your arms
There's
down.
There's no mistake.
Mm-hmm. They take the two seat belts and flip them together. We need an extra seat. Volunteers, anybody, an extra seat.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I want you to go to glennbeck.com. There's a story up there, the coming great wealth transfer. The spoiler alert, it's already here and it's already happening. How your money is being devalued and taken from you and you don't even know it. It's an exclusive at glennbeck.com. We'll give you more on that tomorrow on the radio show, but be the first to read it in advance. Right now at glennbeck.com. Gorsuch has been sworn in. And he said something very heartening.
Yeah, he said to the Scalia family, I will never forget that I inherit the seat of a very, very great man. I mean, so if he holds to that, if he's sincere about that, then you pretty much count on him never siding with the Ruth Bader Ginsburgs of the court.
And like this outcome,
pretty good sign.
There's some bumps in the road here, but the outcome, credit where credit is due here. Not, and it's not just Donald Trump. It's also Mitch McConnell. I mean, think about the things that had to happen. First, the Republicans had to stand together to not give Merrick Garland a vote for an entire year. I never would have thought Republicans would do that. Then Trump has to actually win. Then he has to stick to his list, both of which I didn't think were going to happen. And then finally, the Republicans have to hang together to put the nuclear option through, which you could have doubted as well.
Highly unlikely.
All of those things were pretty unlikely, and they all happened. So, and now just Gorsuch has to actually be good.
And here's the amazing thing. Nobody's saying anything.
It's such a small little
blip.
It's like
a blip. It's just like, okay, yeah, you gotta.
I think they think Gorsuch was so good, they just didn't have an emotional reaction to him.
Right, and I think that they also are trying to save all of their powder for the next one. Mm-hmm. You know, but just let everybody forget that they made the Republicans use the nuclear option and just move on, get to the next one, and don't make this into a big crybaby session. But we should celebrate. This is a very good thing for the Republic.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.